Hi, everyone. I'm John C. Morley, the host of the J. Moore Tech Talk Show and Inspirations for Your Life. Hey guys, it's John C. Morley here, serial entrepreneur, and welcome to another edition, out a little bit late because it's been a little crazy this week, of the J. Moore Tech Talk Show. Usually it's Fridays. Great to have you with us. We have an amazing show. For those of you that don't know, every single week I put out lots of content, but there are short reels that I put out. And at the end of the week in the J. Moore Tech Talk Show, I kind of go over that, but I give some more details rather than, the basic cursory introduction information that kind of gets you excited about the topic. All right, guys. So thank you so much for being here, whether you're here at the 5:30 mark or 5:30 a.m., p.m., 1 a.m., 1 p.m., or maybe even, 10 p.m. or 10 a.m. Doesn't matter. Thank you so much for being here. Really do appreciate that. And this is the April 5th, 2020. Show. Ladies and gentlemen, in case you guys did not know, this is Tech Trends Unveiled. Innovate, Secure, and Collaborate, Series 3, which means we're in our third year, and we're on show number 14. Wow. I cannot believe that. All right. So, this is the J. Moore Tech Talk show, and we get guests sometimes, but we always seem to talk about technology, whether it's controversial, non-controversial. I talk about the things that you're going to want to hear because you use them in your life, you use them in your business, and maybe you might use them wrong if we don't give you tips about what you can do and what you shouldn't be doing. All right, let's just dive right in. All right, so the first thing I want to talk about is the New York City subway gun scanners. Have you guys heard about this? Yes. So the NYPD is doing a 90-day for subway gun scanners. So what is this all about? Well, so the New York City will try gun scanners in their subway systems in an effort to deter violence underground. And New York City officials have announced not too long ago that they're going to be doing a pilot program and deploying a portable gun scanner in the subway systems. And part of their efforts, again, is to deter violence underground. And the scanner will be introduced in certain stations after a legally mandated 90-day waiting period. And this is per Mayor Eric Adams of New York. So according to him, and I want to just make a quote that he says, quote, keeping New York safe on the subway and maintaining confidence in the system is key to ensuring that New York remains the safest big city in America, close quote. So it seems like they've got some pretty big shoes to fill, and they're currently looking for vendors to give them all different types of demonstrations to see which system is going to be the best. I think it's a great idea. The systems that I've seen already in demo can actually tell you not only if there's a gun or a weapon in what part of your body and actually show the location, but also tell you whether the gun on the person has the firing pin loaded or not, which I think this is really cool. We might see more technology like this at airports, but we know that there's been a lot of, foul play in the subway because they know, the bad actors, that they can't actually handle it. So they figured, okay, they can just get away with it. Well, that's not going to last too long. And if you guys are following the Baltimore Bridge, well, I'll call it the Baltimore Bridge technology. So we're going to talk more about this in the show coming up next week. But I want to just let you guys know that, you know, this could have been prevented. We're going to talk more about that, like I said, next week. I'm going to get a little deeper. But if they had technology on board, they could have saved the Baltimore Bridge from being destroyed. And this is according to Roberto Liana, a Virginia Tech engineering professor. But again, the costs would have been a lot higher. This is what they're saying right now. And if they put something together for a certain amount of weight cargo and it was more, well, would have been able to detect. But I'm going to talk more about that next week. I just want to let you know that if technology was deployed, the bridge could have been saved. And I know you're probably wondering, well, how? I'm going to get into more of the how and the why next week. I just want to let you know this week that technology could have been employed and it didn't have to break the bank, because everyone's thinking about the fact that it has to be doing, let's say, one side of the brain. Now, we all know there's two sides of the brain. There is left brain thinking, so left brain versus right brain, right? We've talked about this before on my other show, Inspirations for Your Life. So the brain is divided into two halves, the right and the left, okay? And so you might be asking, well, John, what's the difference? So the left side deals with logic, okay? And so the people that are saying this is going to cost a lot of money are thinking on the left side, the logic, the sequencing, linear thinking, mathematics, facts, stuff like that. The solution that I'm going to talk about has some left side, but it also employs a little more right side. So we're going to talk about that next week, and I do believe the bridge could have been saved. Now, we do know that what caused it was the power to go out on the ship, and they claimed there was just no way to steer it. But we're going to get into that next week, so definitely come back for that. And the new Dutch Hyperloop Center aims to advance futuristic transport technology. It's a 420-meter, quarter-mile white steel tube running alongside a railway line in the windswept northern Netherlands, and it could usher in a new era in the transportation of people and freight. Now, we know that our good friend Elon Musk started a Hyperloop in, I believe it was in California. And Elon Musk's first prototype Hyperloop tunnel, unfortunately, is no more. Bloomberg reports that the roughly 1 mile long white steel tunnel running along the Jack Northrop Avenue near SpaceX headquarters in Hawthorne has been removed and will be replaced with parking spaces. So the question you might be asking, which, you know, I know we're referencing that he had at the beginning. So during the pandemic, nearly all the top executives and founders left Hyperloop One, which also shed the concept from its name after the company decided to issue passenger trips in favor of cargo. Today, there's no full-scale Hyperloop around anywhere in the world. So Musk's test tunnel in California is gone. And so I guess we're going to rely on, this tunnel now, which is again, going to be in the, windswept northern Netherlands. And the question you're probably asking me, John, is the Hyperloop, in the Netherlands, operational? And so it's a test center, okay? It is the largest track. Operators are hoping the newly opened Dutch track will help improve feasibility of high-speed shuttle systems. So it is open. An operator said the facility would help prove Hyperloop's feasibility, saying it could allow 6,200 miles or 10,000 kilometer network of high-speed tubes to be in place around the continent by 2050. And as it stands, the European Hyperloop Center testbed in Vendam is not so much a loop as a 420-meter long forked white pipe running alongside the railway and road that must still be used for now to transport people around the corner of the Netherlands. So I think Europe is going to usher in a new era for this. And you know what's going to happen, just like with USB-C to start in European Union, it got ushered in the U.S. But it's like Europe always seems to have the ideas, and then the United States kind of just follows on. Why is that? Is it because we don't want to spend the money? Is it because we're lazy? I'm not really sure. But it seems like in Europe, there are higher regulations, and because of that, they're always trying to make things better. Well, here's one. I'd be ashamed to have the letters AT&T in my company name. AT&T's breach was a disaster. $72 million. Now, that is not, that's not dollars, $72 million customers. So this is pretty serious, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm very disappointed at AT&T and leaking 72 million current and former account holders' data, which includes the account holder name and the social security number. And I just don't know. You know, does this breach... I should say, does the AT&T breach make people lose trust in them? Well, I'd have to say yes. It's really bad. And with all that's going on, who knows what these guys are triangulating right now. So AT&T... is not content enough to make money from what we pay every month. If you have AT&T as a provider, I don't. They're selling your personal data without consent to marketing companies. And many people are with AT&T since the 90s and are very unhappy about that. But the thing is, their practices are not 100% on par. They're not being transparent. So if there was, which we know there was, a current breach of AT&T resulting in the loss of customer data, 72 million current and past customers, it's something that needs to be addressed. And AT&T, like all other carriers, collects data on their customers to use. You log in to your account, manage your privacy choices, and disable relevant and enhanced advertising. Verizon and T-Mobile do the same thing. And it's up to the customer to dig into their account info and disable those options. I'm not crazy about how this works and how they hide these little nuggets away from people. At the end of the day, all these providers, AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, they're all about the money, okay? And I don't think any one of them is really very good at data security. Apparently, we're learning that companies we have put so much trust in have basically destroyed that trust overnight. I don't know. I'm curious about your thoughts, and I'm going to keep up with this situation because there's more that's going to come out of it. And I'll share that with you guys, but I am very disgusted with AT&T and what they're doing. And I hope that they're at least going to pay for people's credit monitoring, because just because you have a big name, I don't care whether it's AT&T, IBM, and IBM's not in this picture, but my point is, or it's Google, or it's Amazon, or whoever it is, you have a responsibility to your customers, the American people, Canadian people, international people. You have a responsibility. And whether there's a watchdog or not keeping track to see what's going on or to find you, I believe it is your job to make sure you do the right thing before you get pulled over and called on the carpet. All right, there is the Elvis Law impact. And I'm not sure if you guys know about this, but the Elvis Law impact, you probably thought was a great idea. And I actually did too. I thought it was an amazing idea. But local Tennessee musicians feel the AI Elvis Law put in effect in the state is not enough. So what does the Elvis Act stand for? I'll be happy to share that with you. The Elvis Act stands for Ensuring Likeness, Voice, and Image Security Act. So you might be asking, why is this? Well, they feel that it's not protecting musicians and performers that are actually on stage live. And there's a big battle right now about what's going on. How do we protect it? So I think it's on the right track, but I don't think we're anywhere near done. I'm glad that they've started on this pathway, but there's so many bad actors and more that are surfacing every single day that are trying to exploit people's likeliness, their image, the sound, the video, and whether they're making money on it or not, they are basically taking money out of the pockets of performers that they're entitled to, their royalties. I mean, it's like watching a sitcom, for example. Maybe some of you know All in the Family. Maybe you guys know The Brady Bunch or some other great shows, or maybe Chips, right? Or any show out there. Generally, the question everyone always asks me is, how many years is it that a show will go into syndication after it starts? So they can syndicate, but it's the re-syndication where they make the money, okay? They lease the rights. And so even a company like Three's Company, right? They make their big money when they actually syndicate the show after it ends. Now, it's still going to be on major networks, but every time that show airs, and I can name dozens of them. Another one might be, you probably remember the Seinfeld, Seinfeld, right? Yep, Seinfeld. Is in syndication and making more than when it was airing originally. Well, it's because it can air to a lot more markets. In fact, I don't know if you know this, but Netflix paid more than $500 million for Seinfeld. Seinfeld was a huge hit while on air, earning the comedian $267 million in 1998. And then raked in billions after that year's finale, first through record-breaking syndication deals. So you might be asking yourself, how does this happen? Well, when a show ends, people still want to see it. And so they're willing to pay all kinds of numbers to get that on their station. So this way, they know they're going to have people watching. And if people are watching, then that means their advertisers are probably going to be charged more money because they have a very captive audience. We know the kinds of people. And if I had to figure this out, you know, what is the demographic that watched Seinfeld? Do you guys know what the demographic was? Well, I'll tell you. So the demographic that watched Seinfeld were people who, you know, they wanted to laugh. They liked a certain type of humor. And Seinfeld's humor was a very dry humor. So you had to appreciate that. Maybe you guys know Sheldon in the Big Bang Theory with Penny and Raj and all the other people. But then they came out with Little Sheldon. And so people asking you for, is Little Sheldon still on the air? Well, the Little Sheldon is going to end in May of 2024 after seven seasons. But the good news is this is when the actors really start to rake in the dough. Because I explained to you what happened with Seinfeld. The same thing happens because when an actor is no longer going to be performing, they desperately want to see the shows. Even things like Mrs. Bouquet and other UK shows. I mean, this is not a new concept, all right? All right. So how's this for starters? An electronic sniffing dog. John, what are you talking about, electronic sniffing dog? So it's really a live dog, but it's able to sniff out electronics such as storage devices. The dog's name is Nala. It's one of two dogs in the state trained for sniffing out electronic storage devices such as hard drives, smartphones, thumb drives, micro SD cards, and more. And their other one is called Hota Vancouver in Washington. So this is giving officials and let's say law enforcement, a tool to be able to detect this type of storage media when they know they got a bad actor. They may just not know where to find the stuff. Maybe they have a search warrant, but they don't know where things are hidden. They don't know that they're hidden behind an outlet. They don't know they're hidden in a they don't know. But the dog can be going toward it. And then once it's kind of going toward it, they can rip apart whatever the dog is sensing. So really, really cool. Imagine going to bed yourself or your loved ones and having a story read to you or them by artificial intelligence. I think this is the bee's knees. Wellatory launches the first personalized AI-generated bedtime stories driven by heartbeats. This is like so cool. I mean, really, really cool. The CDC reports that 14.5% of adults in the United States have trouble falling asleep almost every day. And millions of people turn to sleep apps with built-in bedtime stories, but bedtime story content is costly to produce and even tougher to personalize, which leaves many users and also developers frustrated by what's out there and the fact that there's limited libraries for the users. So this is why they decided that a sleep flow should never end and constantly surprise users with something fresh and relaxing. And generative AI has finally made this possible and creating stories based on the heartbeat, the user's heartbeat. So we have heartbeat personalization that customizes sound to sync with a user's heartbeat, making sure there's a smooth shift from wakefulness to relaxation, adaptive voice narration, which is really key with stories, binaural beat technology, which we know for a long time has helped with insomnia, post-traumatic stress disorder, chronic pain, and anxiety, and also ASMR. Now, for those of you who don't know what ASMR is, that's autonomous sensory meridian response. And very similar, if I was, let's say, here with you, and let's just say I took, let me see if I have one here. I'm going to take a piece of paper here right now. I'm just going to take one here from my desk, a piece of paper that I don't need, and I'm going to take the paper. And if you guys see the paper, can you see this paper right now? Okay, imagine this. Can you hear that? Hear that crinkling noise? Hear that? Or if I did something... Right? You hear that crinkling, or if I took like a plastic bag or I took bubbles, it's able to really capture your ears, isn't it? All right. We call that ASMR. And I think with that technology alone, it's going to excite people. And there's something called colored noise, which enhances relaxation and improves sleep. So Wellatory is the tech company behind all this marvel invention. And the application ranked in the top 50 health and fitness top grossing and featured on 20 times by the App Store. And by leveraging data from over 1,200 wearable devices and apps, AI machine learning powered apps keep over 8 million members on track for lifelong health. My only question is, this is my question, it's the privacy, right? I mean, is there anything in there? I would probably say no, but I mean, you still want to be careful, right? And so Wellatory is really making a big jump with this. I'm just concerned that it is going to stay very, very secure. So now the way this works is they have a plan. The annual plan, if you pay for the annual plan, it's $8.25 a month. Okay, but you don't pay per month, you pay per year. So if you bill the year in advance, it's $825 times 12, which comes out to be $99 plus tax. Or you can choose to pay $399 one-time payment, full access forever. So this is interesting. I think it has a lot of potential. My only concern is, will the AI be able to deliver enough, let's say, different types of content? Because when I've worked with some basic, let's say, large language models, even some really robust ones, they like to kind of keep sharing the same story or using the same theme. So getting to break that is not always easy. And I've got another story I want to share with you guys. It is the self-refrigerated shipping. But before I get into that, has anybody ever heard of the Ember thermal bottle? Anybody ever heard of that? So it's a temperature-controlled bottle. They have it out for babies. That's one of the models. They have the Ember, basically thermos. That's another one. It's the Ember bottle and the Ember thermos. They work the same way. So Ember has a patented technology that allows you to experience precision temperature control in everyday life, with a vision to transform how the world eats, drinks, and lives to empower you. So they have the big, gigantic one. Then they have more of a, let's say, a mug size, and then they have more of a cup size. So that's pretty cool. And they have varieties of all different colors and things. So to give you guys an example, the Ember mug comes in black and it comes in red. And it's interesting because the Ember mug, they call it the Ember Mug 2, I believe that's what they call it. So the Ember Mug 2 runs, they all try to do this like shop pay plan. So it's $18.05 for 4 interest-free payments. So it costs you $72.20. That's with Apple Find My, right? If you do the Apple Mug, just the plain Apple Mug, so there's no difference in the price there. If I go over to their, Ember Mug 2, which is pretty cool. This comes in a copper, it comes in a gold, it comes in a stainless steel, and it comes in a rose gold edition. So you can get a 14-ounce, you can get a 10-ounce for $129.95, or you can get a 14-ounce for $149.95. It's designed for home or office, and the Ember Mug 2, it does more than simply keep your coffee hot. The smart mug allows you to set an exact drinking temperature so your coffee is never too hot or too cold. And Ember will maintain your chosen temperature for up to 1.5 hours with the Ember Mug 2, the 10-ounce, and up to 80 minutes with the Ember Mug 2, 14-ounce. That is pretty amazing, if you ask me. Really amazing. The Ember Mug 2 is safe to hand wash and submersible up to 1 meter of water. I know you guys are watching. So 1 meter of water in U.S., in case you guys are wondering, 1 meter to cups is basically, if we convert that, 1 meter of water, let's just say 1 meter of water to the U.S. equivalent would be equal to 3.28084 feet. So that is quite a bit. There's some features on there, like a smart LED that indicates when beverage has reached its perfect temperature and more. There's a built-in battery. There's an auto sleep function that intelligently senses when to turn on and off. And there is a temperature range that you can set from 120 to 145 Fahrenheit. So you can select your temperature with the Ember app. Yes, you use the Ember app. And you had the precision right in the palm of your hands. So, interesting. I thought I would check out some of the reviews on the mug because I haven't gotten one myself yet. A couple people said, you know, what happened to product support? I'm very unhappy with Ember. After many happy years with my first Ember, all of a sudden in their customer support has gotten very slow. As a result, I bought a new mug when I was receiving no response to a problem. The new mug is defective, and I still have not received a response to 2 complaints. That's why that person doesn't recommend the mug. Was nice while it lasted. Purchased this mug, and it has lost the paint on the inside. I'm sure it's not real safe with paint flaking off. Mug dead after 2 years. I bought this mug last year, and it stopped charging after 6 months. The cup is great. Unfortunately, the charging portal is garbage. So the question is, will quality go back up? I don't know. I haven't had the chance to play with it myself. So again, you have drinkware. Then you have a baby bottle, which is by Ember, in case you guys are wondering. So you have the baby bottle. And the baby bottle system is, get this, ladies and gentlemen, you ready? four registry payments of $36.10 or $399.95. What do you get in that? Well, that's a great question. So it heats body temperature. Bottle capacity is 6 fluid ounces or 178 milliliters. It holds 2 complete heating cycles when fully charged. Bottles are made from high-quality plastic. Pairs with the Ember Baby app, which is different than the regular app, so it's different apps. And all parts that come in contact with milk or formula are made from BPA-free materials and are food safe. So interesting. Obviously, it comes with the nipple on the top. It looks like it comes with the two bottles and the unit that you put it in. But what I really want to talk about is the Ember Life Sciences. This is something I think that's going to blow your mind. So it's one thing to use this for, let's say, you know, keeping our coffee or our beverage warm, right? But what if we could use this for an entirely different process or something that actually would have more impact on the world? Well, it's here. The division is called Ember Life Sciences, and it's a groundbreaking technology that it's the world's first self-refrigerated cloud-based shipping box. This is cool. So it uses advanced technology to manage this. It includes a return to sender feature. And the Ember Cube replaces current industry standards of single-use shipping materials such as styrofoam, ice packs, and cardboard to collectively reduce millions of pounds of waste per year. But who would use it? Well, great question. That's the pharmaceutical industry. So from the outside, you can immediately see whether it's Celsius or Fahrenheit. So you can always see the temperature and know that it's safe. The Ember Cube is refrigerating a ship box, basically creates from 2 to 8 degrees Celsius for temperature-sensitive biologistics. Their patented temperature control technology, the cube maintains the payload for 72 plus hours. So if you're shipping something like FedEx or UPS or something like that, I think it definitely works very, very well. So the question you might be asking everyone is, so how much? Yeah, I know you're probably going to ask that. How much does one of these cost? Well, from what I can gather at the website, they do not share a cost. They're even working on a future product called a cryogenic and ultra cold version, which is currently in development. So you can actually manage it, track it, as has a GPS system in it, and be able to change the temperature all on the website using a cloud login portal. So Ember has a very robust global patent portfolio with over 150 awarded patents covering temperature control technology, data, and connectivity. And the portfolio spans the breadth of Ember's verticals, including their consumer business and healthcare line. So this is pretty cool. But the question I just have is, how much is the Ember Cube? How much? They are saying that the price of this cube, this is just purely speculation, that the cube is going to be about $100. This is what they're saying. This is just a rumor. Ember Technologies was an American company based in Boston, Massachusetts. It's now owned by Silicon Labs. People say, you know, what's going on? Ember's been known for keeping coffee hot for a very long time and beverages. But now that we're getting into the health industry, which that could be vaccines, it could be medicine, it could be a whole plethora of things. But this is getting more into the IoT, the Internet of Things. But I like the idea that we can conserve on what we have and we can reuse the box. And I think it's a great idea. Maybe people have insulin and they have to track it. If maybe they're traveling somewhere for a day and they need to maintain the temperature, great for things like that. Maybe you're going somewhere and you're doing an experiment. You have to make sure that the chemical is at a certain temperature. Good for that. It's a very small box, but definitely a neat concept. Let's jump on to some issues with gig worker rights settlement. Now, I think this is absolutely deplorable. Instacart is going to pay over $730,000 to settle alleged violations of Seattle's gig worker sick time ordinance. And the grocery store delivery company Instacart has settled with the Seattle Office of Labor Standards for alleged violations of the city's gig worker paid sick and safe time ordinance. So Instacart will pay $730,000, $41.15, and $5,567 the affected workers to remedy the company's alleged failure to comply with the ordinance between July 13th, 2020. So I think this is pretty remarkable, if you ask me, that you know, they're being held accountable. And I think it's going to set a standard, because if we know that companies are going to get caught with their hand in the cookie jar, companies are less likely to try to get by with this. All right, let's jump on to another one, which is the U.S.-Mexico Semiconductor Partnership. This is interesting. I am a little concerned about this. I have to say this. I am concerned about this partnership. Why? I feel that the U.S. has a lot to lose. The U.S. and Mexico are to partner on semiconductor supply chain development and to explore semiconductor chain opportunities. The State Department under the Biden administration is pushing to reduce reliance on China and Taiwan for the technology. So I get it. I understand the reason. I guess we'd rather deal with Mexico than China. And I tend to agree. I think that's a better place. We can trust Mexico more than we can trust China. At least that's what I feel right now. Facebook news tab changes and Meta scales back news. So what's going on? Well, Facebook have recently announced that Facebook will be removing their news tab. And you're like, well, why are they doing that? Well, it'll soon be unavailable as Meta scales back the news and political content. And Meta will be sunsetting, they call it, quote unquote, the Facebook news in early, which is right now, April for users in the US and Australia, as the platform further de-emphasizes news and politics. The feature was shut down in the United Kingdom, France, and Germany last year. So I think this is coming because maybe they got hit with some implications and they really don't want a police thing. I think it's not the fact that they don't want it. I think there's just too much watchdogging and they're basically tired of paying fines. So they probably got hooked to the yin yang over in Europe. So they decided no more news and they're going to seriously regulate what they do put out there. So that's why I believe they have stopped it. I think that is an interesting thing. And here's one, ladies and gentlemen, another issue with technology. And this is basically a robot dog. This is pretty cool, if you ask me. So the Massachusetts State Police robot dog, who was built by Boston Dynamics, was shot three times during a Cape Cod standoff. The dog's name, the robot dog's name, is called Roscoe, R-O-S-C-O-E. It's a four-legged robot used by the Massachusetts State Police bomb squad. Again, it was shot three times by a suspect and rendered inoperable. And then the police bomb squad had to send in tear gas to be able to rescue the robot and to apprehend the bad actor. I think that is like below the belt that somebody is shooting a robot dog. I think the bad actor realized that the robot was going to get him and apprehend him. So he figured his only chances were to shoot at it. But I think it's just terrible. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm sick and tired of companies like Uber and Lyft taking advantage of people. And we remember from a few weeks ago where I said that because of the ordinance passed in basically Minneapolis City, requiring them to pay minimum wage, which was like $15. It was the minimum wage in Minneapolis. And the thing is, $15.57 is what it was as of January 1st, 2024. And so because of this, Lyft and Uber have decided to pull out from Minneapolis City. They were willing to give a quarter raise. But I mean, seriously, guys, I mean, you have shortchanged so many Uber, so many Lyft drivers, so many Grubhub. I think they're all terrible and they're deplorable because they abuse workers. Then they pay their CEOs and their C-level management a lot of money, and they don't give their drivers what they really work, and they risk their lives. In fact, I don't know if you guys know this, but companies like Grubhub actually will put a record against you if you don't take a call, because they feel that if you are, you know, not able to do the call, then that's going to go against you, right? That's a big problem. And so what's going on now is the only way that they won't ding you is by proving that it is a safety risk. Because, again, I guess they don't want to get sued. But that's the only time I know my friend, he was being sent to some bad areas. And when he told them the areas where they were sending him at night, well, they immediately removed it from the ticket when they verified that it was a safety risk. So I think that was pretty cool. And the U.S. and China are in a semiconductor trade war. So what is this all about? So the U.S. may soon unveil a list of Chinese factories that will be barred, basically, from receiving a tech product. So they're drawing up this list, and they're barred from receiving key tools. Now, three people about this said the matter, it's to make it easier for companies to stem technology flows into China. And the list could be released into the next couple of months. And so this could be a help. But the thing is, are they really going to be able to affect it? The U.S. government has voiced national security concerns about letting China access U.S. technology to grow its own capabilities. And U.S. companies have complained it's difficult to know which Chinese factories produce advanced chips and are subject to the restrictions. So do they just ban everyone? That might be what it comes down to. But right now, they're just making it selective. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if China plays games and might be sourcing from other factories. So we're just going to have to see what happens. And I know you're probably saying, you know, John, why is all this going on? What are people doing? And I think it comes down to the fact that people are being bad actors because they can. Let me say that again. People are being bad actors because they can. And by doing that, they feel that there's so much that they can get ahead of people. My challenge is, as technology starts to emerge more, are we going to be conscientious of the potential pitfalls that could have on people's safety, people's privacy, and the livelihood of their own world? I think most people don't understand how someone can literally be, let's say, safe in bed at night, and then something that just recently happened, the U.S. had an attack. Now, they didn't steal anything. They didn't do anything bad other than getting in, but what everyone feels is that it was a practice run because they were just proving that they could do it. And this has a lot of companies in the United States scared because they're out to do something much bigger and much dangerous than just to prove they can. So this is part of a bigger plan to figure out that they're trying to do something massive. And when technology, many companies can track when something goes wrong, but can't take proactive steps rather than only being retroactive. See, that's where I see the danger in our world. And you might not see it as a danger, but I do, because technology, when people learn things about technology, they are now more prepared to do something or to not do something. And that is the biggest concern that I have. If people don't understand that they've got to keep things available, then that's the main thing. That is the main thing. So we'll have to see what's going to happen. But I'm concerned that, you know, people are aware of what Pandora's boxes they're opening. Does that make sense, everybody? I know you're probably saying, gee, somebody attacking us isn't a big deal because they didn't gather anything, they didn't cause any damage. But what you have to realize is that that lesson, the fact that they got in, the fact that they were able to just get into the network, knowing how to do it, learning about the resources, and maybe seeing where things are. This is why in the security world, it's great to always change up things, especially if you had a change of staff or reorganizations. You want to keep your infrastructure map confidential. And you want to be very careful about what you reveal to people in the world, both inside your company and outside your company. Now, just like the AT&T thing, we'll find out probably next week, what is it that caused that? I'm still doing some digging to find out. Don't know if it was inside or outside. And nobody's really said anything, but we'll talk a lot more about that. Ladies and gentlemen, you know who I am by now. I'm John C. Morley, serial entrepreneur, and I am your host of the J. Moore Tech Talk Show and also the host of many other great shows. Please do check out BelieveMeAchieve.com for more of my amazing, inspiring creations, and do like, love, and support everything, including my TikTok, so we can stream everywhere. I'm so grateful for all of you. And it's always amazing to share technology, news, briefs, and, of course, my own personal opinions, but also facts about what I've observed in technology and where things are going. Have yourself a fantastic rest of your day and night, and I'll catch you guys real soon. All right, everyone? Be well. And remember, technology is a tool. It's not good. It's not bad. It's how people choose to use it that makes it so. Have yourself a wonderful evening, everyone. Take care.